And the majority of people are not willing to do that. They'll spend more time and effort and energy thinking about the reasons they can't do it. And guess what? It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, go ahead and talk about all the reasons you can't do something. You're never going to do it. Go figure out reasons to do it and why you can, and how you're going to, you know, leverage what you have to build a better tomorrow. You're going to crush it. You're going to do it. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with Whiskey Wednesday. My main man, Jake Sheehy, is
what's over happening?
Here doing some, you're like jumping jacks, some sit-ups, you're like push-ups, you're like getting pumped up for this episode.
Let's get fired up.
Let's go, man.
Today's a great day.
Let's
hit the ground running. This is going to be fantastic, man.
What do we have on the agenda? What are we talking about today?
Okay,
we've always got a lot of little things that I don't know quite until I sit in this chair what we're going to be talking about.
Some spicy stuff here. We got two entertainment things that are trending right now on social media, if you guys don't know. First is with this play in Hollywood called Jesus Christ Superstar. Big stuff
that's
happening
there. That's a Broadway play. That's Broadway been around for play. A long time, right?
It is?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
See, there you go. And then the next one is with a man named Neil McDonough. He was on Yellowstone. There's kind of some controversy going on with him and what he's kind of saying right now.
Okay.
We'll go over that. Then we're diving into some STR questions about retirement. You know, so we're going to play devil's advocate on being the top 1% properties. We're going to go over some strategic things there. But first and foremost, we got to tell people, go on Facebook right now and go to the Vacation Rental Revolution Facebook page, reactivating it, getting more.
How's it look? I haven't seen it.
Man, we're doing fantastic.
Josh Lehu, he's
doing a fantastic job.
We've got some more, intentionally trying to get some community engagement, and we've got a community manager in there, going it, because we've been posting stuff. You post stuff, right?
Yeah, but he's doing a great job boosting engagement. Go into that Facebook page, post about your property, post questions you have. Let's get that thing fired up.
Yeah.
That's the main thing.
Okay.
But first, here's our first topic. All right.
Okay.
So we have two devil advocate things we can kind of debate about on the first one. So this first one, Jesus Christ Superstar, this Broadway play.
Okay.
People on social media are getting really upset because they're saying, when is enough enough? Right. You can say, you can mispronounce somebody's pronouns. You can do all these things and get canceled. You're done. You're done. You're canceled, right? But when it comes to Jesus Christ Superstar, the person that is playing Jesus is a queer, Black, British woman. And people are going, okay. I've given you too much leniency. Once you start kind of mocking my religion and my God, they, you know, you got to have a backbone somewhere.
Right.
Do you have a hot take on this at all? Do you feel like, man, just let them do their thing? It's, you know, it's broad. They're acting. But at the same time, do you feel kind of hot about it in any way?
I I'm so disconnected with that world. I got to be real honest. Like, I think the woke culture for me is completely dead. Just be you, right? I don't really care. I don't care who gets cast as that. If she's the best person to play in that play. I've never personally seen the play, so I'm not sure what it is. But I'm going to get it. When you start talking about, you know, some very foundational beliefs for a lot of people, Christians specifically.
Yeah.
And you have, so what's the problem? Do they not like that she's gay? Do they not like it's a woman? Do they not like her race?
I think it's a little bit of all.
Because I would think, I don't know. Maybe Jesus can be all of those things.
Dude, you just brought up another huge argument because now biblical scholars are being like, well, where does, because then some people are coming, people are going like, well, God doesn't have a gender, right? But then people are going, well, this isn't about God. This is about Jesus.
Right.
So this is like a different thing. He came in man form.
Listen, I can understand people getting a bit riled up about that, right? I don't think that, I would assume certain characters that you're going to portray certain ways.
Right.
You're not going to have a white man play Kunta Kinte as a slave. Right.
Right. Right.
And so everybody would be really pissed about that. So I get that people are going to be upset, but I also get, hey, listen, if she's the most talented person for the part, maybe this is tough.
Okay. You just brought a huge point. Okay. Say Grace. She goes out and she auditions and they go, Grace, we want you to play Harriet Tubman. And you go, well, guys, I mean, sure, if she's the best to play, but then some people get mad at you or they get mad at Grace. Do you go, well, hey, guys, she auditioned. Right. You know, they chose her for this.
Right.
Does that like get you fired up at all? Because if I think if I have a daughter and if they choose her, then I go, I stand with my daughter. Right. She right. won the part.
Right.
No matter what these other people are saying, she won the part.
Right.
So it's kind of like, ooh.
But she is. Well, my daughter is in yeah. she is in a lot of plays. She's uh-huh. she's tried out for some Broadway shows. Mm-hmm. She's been in a lot of different, you know, live theater stuff around here. Mm-hmm. And the reality is there are certain plays and parts. Now, I doubt this is the case for this one, mm-hmm. but there are certain plays that they have very specific characters that are certain genders, certain mm-hmm. races.
Right.
And they don't have that. They don't have the people actually audition for it. And so they get cast mm-hmm. as, and it, like she was just in School of Rock mm-hmm. and Tamika, who's played by a little black girl uh-huh. in this belting, beautiful voice in the show.
Yeah.
They're casting Tamika. Well, they had a very, like very talented little black girl that, mm-hmm. that was cast for that part because uh-huh. that's the character.
Right.
The problem with it is they only had one and there's two shows. The second cast right. had a little white boy play the part and he had to be Toby. And mm. so I can't remember that. Maybe I think that's what they had, mm. but they had to change because they didn't yeah. have the, you know, when you're casting, like I get live theater just mm. because my daughter's a little bit like, not a little bit. Yeah. She's in a play all the time. Right.
Right.
And there are certain characters you're trying to cast certain genders, certain races, certain ages, everything right. else, right? There's mm-hmm. it's a character in a play. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you don't have that option to choose. And mm-hmm. you say, hey, listen, we have to choose the most talented person for the role. And they have to change the roles up a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know about this one. Jesus Christ Superstar, they might have had some really good options. And they, you know, you maybe have a casting director that wants to do something a little bit different. Look mm-hmm. how much publicity they're getting. And then it's entertainment, right? They're
You're bringing some good points.
There's a lot of different angles that you could go here, right?
That's a really good – that actually reminded me of something. When I was in college in Atlanta, there was a huge thing going on in Atlanta about this dance school. I'm forgetting the name of it. They did a dance where the name of the dance was Pariah. And it means like outcast if people don't know. It means like outcast. And the main dancer girl was a black woman. And people were going outraged about they're making fun of people and they're harboring prejudice and they're doing this. It was this huge outrage, right? But then the director of the dance came out and said, hey guys, we had tons of people audition. I didn't do this as like a racial choice. She was just the best for the part.
And that's so how
like,
I feel.
She had to go on radio. She went on TV. She was like, guys, you got to quit. She's just the best.
She's the
best.
This
isn't some like subliminal message type thing.
No.
So that could be what's happening in the situation.
Well, I think that we've gotten to the point and I think we're getting away from it. I really mm-hmm. do think we're getting away from it where mm-hmm. it's not to prove points. It's like, listen, you be you. I'll be me. Everybody, mm-hmm. like, let's live by a meritocracy.
Right.
The best person gets the part, period.
Yeah.
There are, in entertainment, there are certain characters that you're trying to cast certain, like I said, you know, races, genders, yeah. ages, everything else.
Right.
My daughter goes up against that all the time. And mm-hmm. and it is what it is. And you realize that, hey, listen, one, you got to look at the talent level. Two, you got to look at the character. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're trying to portray a certain character mm-hmm. that has a certain appearance. And that's entertainment. That's fine. Right. Do it. Right. Right? They should. But then also, there are certain things that you're like, hey, listen, I'm looking for the best of the best. I don't care. I'm colorblind here. I'm gender blind. Right. I just want the best talent. And
right.
that's the director and the casting director's choice on how they're going to run their show. And you just deal with it. Right. And
yeah.
like, I love that. I love a meritocracy. Like you give me the best. The best in the business and the best at what they're trying to do, I'm all in, right?
I mean, and she is really great. She just got like an Academy Award or something for Wicked. She's got like an amazing voice and it is like a musical, I believe. So, I mean, yeah, that point makes tons of sense.
So, let's not forget that there's a layer of talent there that can't be forgotten about.
Yeah.
And if she's the best and does an amazing job and they're trying to maybe have a different take on a very, I mean, my daughter is in theater as well, mm-hmm. and she'll play the same. She'll be in the same like she's in A Christmas Carol, for example. Mm-hmm. There's, and she's been in it for the last 3 years at different theaters, mm-hmm. and there will be different, it's a different a script for the same story. Mm-hmm. And they're all a little bit different. There's one that's super funny. There's one that's super serious. There's mm-hmm. one that they have a different take on it. So depending on like the director and the, what the script yeah. that they're going, there's multiple scripts for a lot of these different shows. Yeah. Maybe Jesus Christ Superstar, there's a script for the lady yeah. to be Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And, you know, great. It's awesome. Yeah. Do it. Entertainment's entertainment. I don't,
yeah.
I'm not about the woke, you know, try to prove a point for any of those different things on like, you know, I think it's stupid.
Yeah.
I just think let's
just let them do their thing, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a different thing. And you brought up some really good points about that, about the scripts and everything. That was really good. It brought some new light I haven't thought about.
Okay, good.
Here we go.
And it's not a story I was following, so I'm glad I could actually add to it.
Dude, you did great. Here's the next one. Neil McDonough. Okay, so he was in Yellowstone. He's saying that he's getting blackballed from Hollywood because he doesn't want to have any on-screen kisses that are not his wife, right? So some people are going, man, that is like really respectable. You got wife, you got kids. You don't want to start kissing other women. You don't mm-hmm. want to have any, you know, sex scenes. You don't want to do yeah. that kind of thing. You have a family at home. That's really respectable. Flip side of the coin is, hey man, you're an actor. This is make believe. You can't be upset where, you know, if you're going to get typecasted as the villain who never has like a love interest or anything like that, you can't be upset now.
Right.
Like you can't go, oh, I'm getting blackballed because, oh, you're going to be the one actor who's not yeah. going to act, you know? And that's another one of these Hollywood things, man. I guess that's just fun for people to talk to, I guess. But do you feel like
I'm on the, one, I wouldn't complain about getting blackballed in mm-hmm. an industry that, you know,
right.
One, I mean, you're making a living there. He does. Right. And he does fine. Right.
He does fine.
He works a lot with like Angel Studios. Mm-hmm. I know a little bit about him mm-hmm. Because I'm familiar with the guys that run a lot of the Yellowstone and mm-hmm. the Taylor Sheridan World stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's in a lot of those shows. He's in a number of those shows. He's got very conservative Christian values. Mm-hmm. He doesn't like to do that kind of stuff. And that's fine.
Right.
That's your choice, right?
Right.
Again, you be you. Mm-hmm. But don't be upset if you don't get it, that they don't change the script for you, right? It's like, hey, if you're not going to do certain things that I, as a director, want in the scenes, I'm not gonna cast you for that. That's not getting blackballed. Yeah. That's just saying, hey, listen, you're gonna play a very specific character with very mm-hmm. specific limitations and rules that you mm-hmm. have placed, and mm-hmm. saying, hey, listen, I'm not willing to go here. That's okay.
Right.
There's a lot of actors and actresses do that.
Right.
Now, the people that are pissed about it and saying, no, you're an actor, you should do whatever they ask you to do, that's stupid. Like mm-hmm. I think that's stupid too. Why can't somebody say, I draw a line in sand? One of my friends was actually just over at our house for a barbecue, actually works with him mm-hmm. because he works on a lot of the Taylor Sheridan stuff. And he was on one of the shows, new shows coming out. And mm-hmm. he plays a lot of, he's in almost all the shows, but he's mm-hmm. not like a leading actor. He does different scenes, but he was asked to play a scene that he was a child trafficker mm. and he was taken and he was watching this rape scene and everything right. else. And he didn't want his kids seeing him in that. He went back and said, I don't really want to be in this scene because I don't want my kids watching this and mm-hmm. seeing that I'm like this, you know, this monster mm-hmm. And he's like, I wasn't the person in the rape, like in yeah. the rape scene, but I was part of the crew that was like, grab the yeah. kid and then it was this nasty scene and he's like, I just didn't want to do it. Why?
Right.
What's wrong with somebody saying I don't want to do that?
Yeah, I don't think it's wrong at all.
A job over it, that's the director's choice or the producer's choice or whatever mm-hmm. else, right? But having things you will do and won't do, what's wrong with that? Again,
yeah,
just be you. Mm-hmm. And if somebody doesn't like it, they don't like it. Maybe you lose a job or two. I don't know that you got blackballed or blacklisted or whatever else. I'm not sure about that. I've seen you in quite a few shows.
Yeah.
He was just in a rodeo show, The Last Ride or something like that. My kid saw him in that. I've seen him in, he's got a big part in Yellowstone. He's got a big part in, Tulsa King with Sylvester yeah. Stallone.
He's in a lot of things, man.
Yeah. I mean, I like him. I think he does a good job. Yeah. He always kind of plays that same role as kind of a villain.
Well, that's kind of your role, dude. I mean, that's what you got.
Hey.
And if you're good at it, just lean into it. I mean, if that's your line in the sand, and that's respectable. As a man, I go, hey man, I respect that. That's your line in the sand. So you do you. You do
don't
your
complain
thing,
about
but don't
it
complain.
Either.
You can't go, don't go on a talk show and be like, I'm being blackballed. It's like, no, man, you made that choice.
Right.
You know, so there's their thing. All right, now let's kind of decompress. All right. Let's get away from
this. Can we talk about some investing stuff?
Yeah, out of the entertainment, we're going to go into some real stuff here.
I'm getting pretty calm about how I'm answering a lot of that stuff.
I'm trying to get the blood pressure up a little bit, you know? Just
I'm like calm, cool, collected.
Batman. Huh? Like Batman. You're calm, cool, in the face of trouble, dude. Okay, here we go. So I saw once again, I mean, if anyone's like curious about how America is doing on their savings and retirement, go to Yahoo. Go to Yahoo News. They are publishing so many articles about how retirement is like terrible for Americans, how people are not saving up. And then when you read it, you're like, man, this is really depressing and really scary. But anyway, so they're saying how Americans haven't saved up. They haven't put enough in their accounts. They're saying the average 55 to 64-year-old American has $244,570 in their 401k. To me, that doesn't seem, first and foremost, like a lot of money. That seems scary. Like we've talked many times on how, you know, the traditional game doesn't work and how you're being lied to and how people, you need to wake up, man. If you're like working 9 to 5 and you don't know what's in your 401k, you just think it's been growing well, you need to look and you need to like prepare because everyone else is saying it's not enough. So I want to kind of put you in their shoes, right? You're an average everyday American. You're 55 to 64. You wake up, you look at your 401k, you have $244,570. In your account, and you go, man, that's not going to make me. That's not going to last. What would you do with that money? Of course, we're going short-term rental, but how would you handle that? Would you try and go, I need three right off the bat. Let me just get three. Or would you go, let me get one that's doing really well? What kind of scenario would you do?
One, you have to understand the game you've been playing is not working. Mm-hmm. Like first and foremost, like this story we have been told go to college, get a job, contribute to your 401k, let your employer match it, and you're going to be great.
Yeah.
That is such a crock of shit and the biggest lie that people have been told. But it is a huge problem, right? When you're 55 years old and you've been following the rules, you've been doing what you were supposed to do. And all of a sudden you got 250 grand on average across the US in their 401ks. Those are people that are hardworking Americans that are contributing and doing the things that they were told was the right thing to do so that at 65, they could retire. You can't retire on $244,000. You take that 4% rule of being able to withdraw 4% a year and being able to live off of that. That's 10 grand a year. 250 grand, taking 4% out, that's $10,000 a year. Can you live? Can anybody live in the US on $10,000 a year? No. If you're getting a 10% return on that and you're able to take out 10%, that's $25,000 a year. It's very, very difficult to do. So you realize the game that you've been taught, the game that they told you to play, that's not the game that's going to help you in the end.
Right.
And that's ultimately, in my opinion, what they want. They want us all dependent on them at the end of our days. And you probably sooner than that, right?
Right.
And they, you know, which is why they tell us like, hey, listen, you know, this is somebody else's fault. This is their fault. And by the way, we're here to help.
Right.
And it's a huge problem. Mm-hmm. And so first of all, realize that. Second of all, it's like, okay, what game am I going to play? And maybe short-term rentals is part of that plan. Maybe it's not. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you have to realize that, okay, what can I do to take some of that money, take some of my active income right now to continue to add to something else instead of the game they told me was the smart play.
Right.
In my opinion, people, I think that real estate is by far and away the best move for the average American. And the issue is there's fast money, there's medium money, there's slow money. Fast money is our everyday hustle, grind, paycheck, active income, right? What are we doing to get those dollars today? I've got to be able to invest into medium and slow money. We all have to have all three of them. Real estate's more slow money. And so we have to say, can I maybe leverage that money I've got? And then this is what they scare you with as well is, oh no, if you withdraw early, you got these penalties and you got this and that and the other, which you do, you're going to pay them. But that's their threat to keep it in there, keep it in the system. Yeah. I mean, that system's not working for you. So get it the hell out and figure out where else to put it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And maybe like real estate is a wide ocean. It's a wide world, right? And there are different lanes of real estate investing. All have pros and cons, including short-term rentals. The next step is to educate yourself. Invest in yourself. Invest in some education on, and a lot of that education on the front end is time. right? Just mm-hmm. spend the time to figure out what lane that you think this is going to be the best option for you. Maybe it's starting a business. Maybe it's right. not real estate. Maybe it's something
right.
else.
Right.
But figure out what it's going to be different, because the plan you've been on doesn't work. And no. I feel like that this is the hardest part of that, is jumping ship on a plan that you've been sold your whole life.
I know.
And it, even looking in the mirror saying it doesn't work. But guess what? The unknown is scarier than that, than the plan that doesn't work. And so people never make the move. They right. just sit there and they say, well, I'm just going to keep doing it. And maybe someday I'm going to wake up and this 250 grand is going to take care of me for the rest of my life. It's not. And then ultimately you're dependent on who? Probably governments and handouts and everything else. That's what they want. Don't give them that.
That's like, so scary.
You know, you've got to be self-reliant. It's why we talk about this all the time. It's like personal responsibility, self-reliance, not being the victim.
I know.
Those things that we were talking about in the front end. Mm. Everybody's up in arms because you mentioned a black gay woman playing Jesus Christ in Jesus Christ Superstar. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
If she's the best, she's the best, right? I get that people are going to be upset about it, but guess what? It's entertainment, right? They're not saying that you have to believe in it. They're not saying you even have to watch it. You don't have to support it.
Right.
Like, why are we making all these different categories to be victims, right? And so at the end of the day, who cares? Who cares? Mm. Go take, you know, go like, what does Andy Purcell say? Personal excellence is the ultimate rebellion. Go say, hey, listen, I'm going to go figure out this game on my own, and go figure out a game that is worth playing and a game that I can start to build and start to be excited about. Mm-hmm. It's not always easy. It's going to be scary as hell the first time you decide I'm going to maybe take that money out of my 401k. Mm-hmm. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. I'm not giving anybody financial advice. I'm saying, listen, you've been doing that game, playing that game for a long time. If the average 55 to 64 year old American has $244,000 in their 401k, that's not enough to retire. So that shows you that the plan you've been on, the blueprint you've been following, is not going to work. Have the guts to say, listen, I'm 55 years old. I'm 65 years old. You know how many people say it's too late for me to make a change now? Bullshit. That's the dumbest excuse to say I'm going to do something different. So what are you going to do? Sit back, throw your hands up and say, okay, Mr. Government, give me my handouts.
It's like it seems like you're choosing your fear. You're either choosing the fear of I'm too scared to pull the money out, right, of the 401k because of the penalties or what could be. I don't know. I'm scared of that. Or you have enough fear to go, I'm not going to be able to live. Like, I've worked. I'm not going to be able to maintain my life in my early or my late years.
Yeah.
Where it's supposed to, it's time for me to relax now,
right,
to reap what I've sown. I can't do that. So you're either going to have the fear of not knowing what to do, the unknown of pulling it out, or enough fear is going to light a fire underneath your ass where you go, I've got to do something. Yeah. Something's got to change. And man, you got to choose, man. I mean, it sucks. It sucks to hear that people that have like worked are just now going to be in this rut and they're going to have to try and figure it out. And it's guys, you have the power. You have the ability to make a change. Man, that's scary.
Yeah, it's a hard pill to swallow. I mean, it's hard when you see that number.
Oh yeah.
At that age, how many people do we talk to? I talk to people all the time at Vodacy. Our core membership group is that, you know, 45 to 60 year old person that is realizing, holy crap, this road I've been on that I thought was going to be a good road at the end of the day, they start to realize it's not going to work.
Yeah.
And they start to make those changes and they start to change their outcomes and they start to, but they're having to leverage some of that money. They're going to have to figure out how to, you know, give up on some of the things that they're doing today and double down on something that they can do and have a better tomorrow. Right. And that's making sacrifices today.
Right. But it's opening your eyes.
Yeah.
Like he said, you know, open your eyes to this, man. You can't just put your blinders on and put your head down and go, oh, it's going to be okay. When push, it's going to be fine later down the road. Let's just keep chugging along. Man, open your eyes. It's not okay. People are yelling at you from the rooftops. It's not okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And it's not, you don't have to figure it out on your own either. That's the other thing too, is there is no excuse in today's day and age, because there's people that have been there and down that road before you that have a blueprint you can follow that actually does have a different outcome than the road that you've been on. Mm. And doesn't mean that it's going to be easy. If somebody tells you it's easy, if somebody tells you they've got something secret hidden behind a paywall, mm-hmm. not the right person, mm-hmm. you know, you should be able to get whatever information you need for free. And then you decide, hey, do I want to have somebody help me execute? Maybe, maybe not. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, there are blueprints out there. There are paths that you can follow to mm-hmm. put yourself on a different trajectory than the one you're on right now. Mm-hmm. And the one you're on right now, for a lot of people, if they read that and they are part of that statistic, mm-hmm. it's a scary statistic. Mm-hmm. And you have to say, okay, I can either figure out that maybe I didn't pick the right choice, the right blueprint to follow. That's mm-hmm. okay. We all make mistakes.
Yeah.
Have the guts to iterate. Have the guts to make the change mm-hmm. and then start to run down a different path. Mm. And don't try to recreate the wheel. There's people that will say, hey, here's the baton.
Yeah.
You run faster and farther than I've ever run because I'm going to help you avoid all those mistakes that I made in the very beginning. Mm. And ultimately, that's what we try to do at Vodacy. But there's people all across different aspects of real estate, investing, business, whatever else. Figure out what path you want to run down mm-hmm. and then find the right partner to help you accelerate your progress and avoid some mistakes so that you can start to say, I'm going to have a different outcome than the one I'm on right now.
Mm. Mm. Right. That was beautiful. Okay. Moving on. Here's a question I had. Now we're posting these every Monday. We're posting a Vodacy case member study. If you don't know about it, go to our Facebook, go to the Instagram. You'll see, you know, for yourself, the real numbers, the real property, everything like that. And here's a question I had coming up with it was, we just posted one today about Broken Bow in Broken Bow,
Oklahoma.
And I was thinking to myself, you know, we have a lot of members and a lot of members operating in the top 1%. How do we here at Vodacy handle when multiple members go, we want to go to Broken Bow, and now they're in a way kind of, is this the right way to think about it first and foremost? Is it the right way to think about it? Now they're kind of competing to see who's number going to be the number one property, and then how do we handle that?
Yeah, it's a natural, like, it's kind of that scarcity mindset that mm-hmm. starts to creep in. We start to think, well, if somebody else is already at the top, mm-hmm. how can I go at the top? Mm-hmm. When mm-hmm. you look and you have more of an abundance mindset and you really just peel back the layers of the onion mm-hmm. in all of these markets across the US and the amount mm-hmm. of consumer dollars that are being spent in all these markets, there's a lot of room at the top. Mm-hmm. And there's more room at the top than there is in the middle of the market. Mm-hmm. And because it's just, there's fewer people that will do what it takes to be a 1% property. And because of that, you can help each other raise the bar. When mm-hmm. when I came out with a case study in 2022, I bought a property in Cherry Log. I did a full year case study. Somebody mm-hmm. told me you couldn't, that was a too saturated market. There's no way to operate at the top of these markets anymore. Mm-hmm. You got to find less crowded markets, less saturated markets, everything else. Mm-hmm. So I did a full year and a half case study on saying, okay, I'm going to go buy a property in a really crowded market. Mm-hmm. We're going to do what it takes to be at the top of the market. We bought that property. We did what we did. And again, this was like, I have a 3.5 hour case study that you can go get on my website and watch it from start to finish, mm-hmm. what our projections were. By the end of that 3.5 hour video, it was filmed over a whole period of time, right? So you can see the whole process. Mm-hmm. And how did we do versus projections? How did we do versus all this? We ended up having the number one property in the market. We set a new high water mark in that market.
Come on.
Since then, though, that was in 2023. Mm-hmm. I bought it in middle 2022. I launched it in December of 2022. So in December of 2023, I did a case study on it. Mm-hmm. Since then, there have been multiple properties that have leapfrogged, and then that mm-hmm. high water mark continues to go up. So mm-hmm. what happens? It's like the 4-minute mile, right? You say, hey, listen, nobody thought they could do the 4-minute mile. Roger Bannister came out, ran a 4-minute mile. And then within a year, like three other people ran a 4-minute mile. And for years, there was this glass ceiling. As soon as somebody breaks it and raises the high water mark, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, it's possible to do it. And everybody starts raising the bar and leapfrogging mm-hmm. each other. And so now there's multiple properties in that market on an annual basis since 2023. And we broke through that ceiling. Mm-hmm. Nobody was making over $100,000. We made 134 on that property, in counting our direct bookings, 114 on the OTAs on Airbnb. Mm-hmm. And so then since then, if you go look at that market, the top of that market, there's multiple properties in the $130,000, $150,000 range. And so everybody starts to raise the bar there. So if people would, like, the consumer in the short-term rental space specifically, and this happens in most industries, but the consumer wants to spend money on a really good experience. When somebody is there creating a great experience, what they're doing is giving the belief that somebody else can do it as well. Mm-hmm. And guess what? I have very limited inventory. I have 30 days a month that I can rent my property. Mm-hmm. If there's a lot of demand in a market, there's no way I can service all that demand. So there's so much more room at the top because there's fewer people willing to create these great experiences, design these properties to be fully immersive experiences. And if you are willing to, ultimately what happens is you just both make more money, right? Mm. It's kind of like why when you see a McDonald's, you're going to see a Burger King and an Arby's and a Wendy's all in the same area, right? Mm. Because they all make more money all being in the same area, in the same market together, right? When you go to a restaurant, you don't just usually see one restaurant. There's an area in your community where there's the fast food restaurants, there's going to be multiple sit-down restaurants, and they all go the same area because they all make more money by being in the same market together, right? Same happens at the top of these short-term rental markets. And so it's you when you start to understand one, consumer behavior, two, the economics behind the dollars being spent and how much money is there and how limited you actually are. If there's, you know, if there's a market, we're talking about Blue Ridge, you're probably, you know, you're looking at a market that has probably $10 to $15 million a year being spent in that market. Even if I narrow it down to just a certain bedroom count, you probably have $5 to $7 million a year. And so you've got $500,000 a month, let's say, in a market being spent on three bedrooms. You have a property and you have, even if you had, you know, $1,000 a night property in a three bedroom and you were charging $1,000 a night, you can only capture $30,000 of that, you know, that $500,000 a month that's being spent. And most of the money is spent at the top of the market. Mm-hmm. And that's also where the least amount of competition is. And so there's this outsized return by doing that. And so when we tell our Vodacy members and they understand that, we look at it and they realize, holy crap, one, I don't care if another Vodacy member has the number one property, because most likely I'll raise the bar and I'll leapfrog them. And then we're going to just both continue to raise the bar in that market. Instead of the opposite, what the masses do is they go into these markets. They all have these beautiful model homes in great areas. They all look the same because they're all designed the same. Mm-hmm. They all compete on price, because if the consumer can't differentiate what you have different than somebody else, then it's a commodity. And the only difference is price, right? And so they just sit and struggle and struggle and struggle in the middle of these markets. And where I say everybody goes to die. And so when you start to say, hey, listen, I'm gonna be attracted, I would rather go into a market that has a very high producing property, because I know the consumers are already willing to spend money.
Right.
And we're we're getting a recipe that and some really good indicators that am I maybe going to be able to, like when I went to Cherry Log, when you set a high watermark, you're guessing, you're saying, hey, listen, you know, top properties at $80,000. I paid $800,000 for the property, went and refurnished and everything. At $80,000, I would have lost money. I knew I had to set a high watermark in that market, but it was way less predictable than if somebody was already making $130,000 on their properties in that market. Now, the nice thing is that market is very attractive, because people can go look and say, oh man, there's properties in the $130,000, $150,000 revenue range in this specific market, bedroom count, everything else. And it wasn't like that 2 years ago, which is pretty fun.
Okay, that was really interesting. So the parameters of the question, first and foremost, don't even apply, because in the scenario I brought up, it seems like there's a level that cannot be beaten. Like you're competing to see who can get to the top, whereas the truth is multiple people are just going to keep raising the top. You're going to keep going up. Okay, so that was okay. Now here's another question. As you were talking, I'm thinking to myself, would it be better to advise someone to go into a market where there's already evidence of somebody operating in the top 1% and they're charging a way higher price and doing that unique experience? Would you rather go into a market where you already have evidence of people willing to pay for the money, or would you try and find that market where, you know, everyone just kind of looks like a commodity?
Yeah,
or is it the same thing?
When you have evidence, again, it gives you a layer of predictability, right? There's going to be a ceiling that a consumer is willing to pay for certain things at certain times. And so ultimately, having evidence that they're willing to pay a certain amount is a lot more predictable from an investment standpoint, right? I can underwrite, because we're always looking backwards when we're underwriting. When we're projecting forwards, we're guessing, right? We're saying, hey, listen, if I have to get this amount, I think I can do it because nobody else is doing what I'm going to plan on doing. But you don't know yet because nobody has, you know, nobody's run down that road before. It's uncharted territory. So it's from an investment standpoint, it's much more predictable to find those markets that somebody is setting a really good bar and a high bar. Not in, and a lot of people look at that from the exact opposite. They're like, oh, don't go in there because you got to compete at the top. I like that because I can see that the consumer is willing to spend money at whatever experience or proximity or type of house, whatever they're offering. I can use that as a little bit of predictability of when I'm underwriting. And so if I don't have that, I'm guessing at the high watermark and what that is. And there's going to be a limit at different times. And that's why it's fun to have multiple people competing because it's way easier to raise that watermark if there's multiple properties instead of one that keeps trying to inch up. It's hard when you're trying to separate as a single property from the pack because the market has kind of determined I'm willing to pay X amount for this type of a property. And if I give a better experience, I'll pay you more, but there's going to be ceiling. That year that I was doing that, there was, we were setting that high watermark. The next year that I went out, I said, okay, we did the case study. I didn't want to try anything too crazy, right? We wanted to make sure that we followed our process. The next year, I tried to push my price because I had really high occupancy. I had a 78% occupancy. In my mind, that was too high. I want to have lower occupancy, higher prices. I tried to push my prices above a $400 a night range. I averaged $378 a night that, that year. Wouldn't think it would be hard to push me to $400.
Wow, that didn't seem like that much.
The minute I got above $400, I heard crickets because nobody in that market was charging an average of $400. They would during different times of year. I'm talking about my average baseline price. And at that time, a three bedroom property, the consumer was saying, hey, listen, I'm out. We're not paying $400 for that property. When I was averaging $378. Doesn't seem like a $22 difference on my average baseline. And the consumer said, nope. And so I went the first 2 months of 2024 and in January and February, and I almost was hearing crickets. I had one or two bookings because I was trying to push that price. The minute I dropped it, I had a three in front of it, immediately started. Now, today, because other people have come into the top of that market, we can have a baseline that's higher than that. But it was, it was a, like now that I've got, and it's not a whole bunch of properties, it's a handful of properties. And we all make more money by being able to compete at the top with each other.
Okay, so, Two more questions, and then we gotta wrap this up.
This is fantastic. Deep into this
stuff. Here we go. I want to keep going because this is really interesting. So the more properties that are pushing the high watermark, they're under the 1%. At the end of the day, it's going to help you too. You don't need to see it as a kind of a competition of like, oh, they're beating me. Oh, I mean, I would say, you still want to be the best, right? You always compete, I guess. But the second that someone was pushing the high watermark, now you're able to make more money. Because you can charge more. Now you can put a four instead of the three in front. So it's better to be around the 1% people that are pushing the higher watermark. 100%. Okay, 100%. Now I'm thinking to myself, man, we're talking about 1% properties, but now this kind of, in a way, do you think it also translates to the 1% kind of person? The 1% person that's going to open their eyes about their 401k, that's going to open their eyes and go, I'm willing to go into a place that's saturated. I mean, these are avenues that some people do not want to go.
No.
They do not. That's too much. Let's just play it safe. It takes a type of person and mindset to do what you're talking about. That's huge. 100%. Right?
I mean, you got to realize like we talk about a lot of this stuff online and our podcasts and everything else. And we try to help people, like we say, walk into this with their eyes wide open. The majority of people that we talk to that are actually saying, hey, I want help. Like they reach out and say, I want to help you accelerate. Guess how many of those people on average actually do something and actually move forward from there? It's still a low percentage. 20% of the people that we talk to that are saying, hey, I actually still want to. And those are the people that actually raised their hand and said, I want to have this conversation about what does it take to move faster? What does it take to accelerate? So you're exactly right. There's a certain part of, you know, all of us that has that real competitive fire. That fire burns brighter in some of us than others. Some of it, we've let it extinguish altogether. We have to reignite it. And hopefully we, you know, everybody reignites it because I do believe the more people that continue to raise the bar and operate at a high level in this industry, it just gets better and better and better for all of us, not worse. And so I am not of the mindset that I want people to keep things a secret. I want the bar to be raised across the board because I've seen the effects of that. But I also very much understand that only a small percentage will ever do it. It doesn't matter how much we talk about it. It doesn't matter how much we try to explain to do it. We want it to happen because it helps everybody. But at the end, and it helps everybody all the way down to the consumer. The consumer gets a better service. We talked about last week, you know, the rules and all the stuff that
guest book and all that stuff.
The laundry list of items that you had to do up on checkout and everything else. We don't want that. I don't want that in the industry. Right. I don't. And a lot of people are like, oh, that's awesome because I can compete against that person and kill them and we'll crush them in the market. Yeah. No, they're still in the market. You want that garbage out. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we want a better marketplace. It goes back to the sports analogy too. I grew up playing sports and I talked to my son. He's in sports right now. Mm-hmm. And anybody that you talk to that plays at a high level, they hated playing the games when it was a walkover, like a blowout game.
Oh, or you just walked over them.
The competition just wasn't there. Right. You know, average people like playing those games to pad their stats. Competitors hate those games.
Right.
They want to play against the best. They want to go against the best. Right. I love rodeo. It's rodeo season right now. Mm-hmm. The best cowboys, they want to get on the rankest bulls. They want to get on the rankest horses, the ones that nobody can ride. Mm. The best ones, they want to be the ones that rode them. And it's the same type of a mindset. You want to compete against people at a high level.
Right.
You don't want to compete against somebody's injured or not operating at a high level or not playing in the same category. That's no fun. Who cares about winning that person? Mm-hmm. Right. If they're, you know, you want to be on the court or the field or, you know, nose to nose with somebody at your level or better, because it's going to raise you to be better.
Right. Oh man, I love it. I'm getting fired up. Okay. Now here's my last question.
Okay.
Devil's advocate. Here we go. What would you say to somebody who's saying, man, you guys are only in the top 1% of the properties. You guys are only at the top because you can afford to put that amount of money into the design and the photos and the pickleball court, all that stuff. You're only like that because of the money you have. Someone like me that's average, that doesn't have that amount of money, I'm in the middle for that reason. Would you say, man, you just didn't take out a big enough loan, dude? What are you talking about? Or you go, no, you can find still amazing stuff on Amazon for super cheap. You're just not doing that. Or, I mean, dude, what kind of argument immediately comes to your head when someone just wants to put out an excuse like that?
Stop being a victim. Okay. Right? If I heard, like, the minute you start talking, immediately my head just goes to, really?
Yeah.
You're gonna stop your pursuit of this because you're saying I have a better advantage than you. That's such bullshit. You know, how do you know what advantage I have? How do you know how much money we put in properties? We're investors. We have to get a return on all this stuff as well. Figure out what you have and then figure out, one, how to play the game. First of all, figure out the rules of the game you want to play. Figure out how to play it at a very high level. And then you start to figure out how to leverage time, money, knowledge, right? All those different things so that you can say, okay, maybe if I do have more money, it just allows me to go buy bigger properties. It doesn't allow me, like, people come in with certain budgets and I say, hey, listen, you think you're going to go buy $1 million property. My suggestion is we go buy a $500,000 property and absolutely crush it in that because you have enough money to get it to the finish line. And a lot of times that's one of the biggest front end conversations we have. I'd way rather see you buy a lesser property because maybe you don't have enough money to compete at $1 million range. I'm just using that as an example.
Right, I'm with you.
Buy a lesser property and get it to the finish line, crush it, and then parlay that into something bigger and better. But just to sit there and say, I mean, how do you know what my starting point was? How do you know, I mean, how long we've been doing this? All you're doing is quit comparing, figure out the game. Figure out how you can play the game at your current level and what it's going to take for you to do different.
Yeah.
And the majority of people are not willing to do that. They'll spend more time and effort and energy thinking about the reasons they can't do it. Mm-hmm. And guess what? It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah. You know, go ahead and talk about all the reasons you can't do something. You're never going to do it. Go figure out reasons to do it and why you can and how you're going to, you know, leverage what you have to build a better tomorrow. You're going to crush it. You're going to do it. Right. And so at the end of the day, you know, go figure out how to play the game and then take your resources, figure out how to leverage those resources. And it's all three of those: time, money, knowledge, and being able to figure out how to play that. Go take what you have and parlay it into something bigger and better.
Man, just stop being a victim, bro. You can do it. You better, like, slap yourself in the face, man. Look in the mirror. What are you talking about?
Exactly.
Like, come on, snap out of it, dude. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
All right. Well, man, if that doesn't get you fired up, if you're listening and you're not fired up to go get a 1% property, I don't know what will, bro. I don't know. Hey, I don't know.
It's a pretty fun. It's pretty fun to be at the top of those markets.
I know.
And it's pretty fun to see other people do it too. There's a level of competition. Like you said, I like, you know, when we drop to two or three in that market and then we're like, okay, I gotta jump back up. I gotta leapfrog back to the top. It's that kind of gets your juices flowing a little bit.
I mean, the one we posted today in Waynesville, Michael's property in Waynesville, North Carolina, man, when you look at the AirDNA data and I'm looking, I go, man, this guy is making what, 68K more than the second property. And he's got a higher nightly rate and still higher occupancy. Like he's hitting on every mark. And then he goes, oh yeah, I'm doing so good. I'm going to go get another second property and I'm going to try and make that one 1% too. Yeah. And you go, man, once you start, when you're winning, I don't understand why anyone would go back. Why would you go back?
Exactly. But the problem is people see, and everybody wants the view. Nobody wants to climb. Right. People see the end result.
Yep.
And, you know, Michael's been in our program for a couple of years. He's an amazing student and he has put in the hours. He has struggled through building up what he has today, right? And nobody sees all that, right? Yep. You do within our Vodacy family. Mm. But again, he could have said, oh, it's going to be too hard. Oh, right. It's not worth it. Yeah. Oh, you have an easier road than me.
Yep.
He didn't. He said, okay, here's the recipe. Here's the blueprint. I'm going to follow this. And many conversations of tough times and tough days and tough decisions. And ultimately, staying with it and being persistent and being consistent with everything that he's doing and putting in that effort so that now he looks back and says, yeah, I have this property. He also has another property that's on its way to the top of that market.
That's awesome.
And it was, I mean, it's a painstaking process that never ends. But instead of you look back 3 or 4 years and you're like, holy crap, look what I just built. And that's pretty dang fun.
Isn't that seems like, I mean, I'm totally dragging on here. I'm sorry. We'll wrap up. But isn't that just so much more like, okay, so say you've been lied to with your 401k, right? And you look back and you go, man, I spent all that. I mean, it's two different feelings. You can have your 401k and you can look back and you go, man, look at all the time I spent at this company. But bro, what do I have to show for it? Now I'm struggling, right?
Yeah.
And then it was kind of like, what is the saying? Like the road to heaven feels like hell, but the road to hell feels like heaven. Man, you're in your 9 to 5 and you end up and you're like, bro, that was so easy. But then at the end, you have nothing to show for it.
Right.
Or you struggle, like you said, the easy button or whatever it is, and you're going to struggle for it. But then you're going to be able to look back and you go, man, I have properties in the 1%. I can take care of it. I can go vacation at these things. Like, look at what I built. I don't understand how this isn't like connecting with people. You know, it's a different mindset, I guess, just across the board.
It's different. I mean, you got to realize we've been indoctrinated our whole lives to a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
Right. And so, I mean, it's not like, you know, people are, you know, idiots out there. I mean, it's just we've been exposed to one way of doing things for so long.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we've had little pieces of exposure to this different lifestyle, but we don't really understand what it took to get there. And so we go back to our own way of thinking. Mm. And so, again, it's just, you know, it's like, I'm not mad at anybody, like when they're complaining about the, you know, the actress that gets the part or understanding somebody that sticks by their values. It's like, hey, listen, there's room for everybody. There's room for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Let's everybody be themselves. Go build your version of what, you know, like we always say, build the life you don't want to take a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
You go do that for you and forget about what everybody else is doing. Forget about pointing fingers. Forget about saying, well, you have this advantage or you have that disadvantage and I'm not getting it because of this.
Mm.
Forget about that stuff. Come it doesn't on. Matter. At the end of the day, you might be right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You might be dealing with a black on a blacklist. You might be, you know, subject to some prejudice. Mm. At the end of the day, it might be true, but what does it matter?
Yeah.
You still have to go do your thing.
Yeah.
You still have to build your life that you want to have. Yeah. And at the end of the day, whether you're right or wrong, it really doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Go do what you can do to build the life you don't want to take a vacation from that starts to look like and form a different tomorrow than what you maybe have as a reality today, if that's what you want, right?
Mm.
And forget about whatever disadvantage or advantage you have. Forget about what everybody else is saying.
Yeah.
Put your blinders on and go to work.
Yeah. Man, sun's going to come up tomorrow. Either way, no matter what people are thinking or feeling, the sun's coming up.
There you go.
That's it, man. I got to call it.
Okay, we're calling it. Oh, that was a long one.
Yeah.
Whiskey Wednesday.
Yeah.
We kept going.
Time flies when you're having fun, hey, man.
All right, guys. Listen, we know how valuable time is. I hope you got something out of this conversation. I hope you, we always appreciate you spending your time with us. And we hope you walk into this short-term rental game with your eyes wide open. It is a fun game to play. There's a lot of nuances to it. And we try to talk about a lot of those on the podcast. If you know somebody else that would like to be a part of these conversations, share the show. Those things are important to us. They're very helpful. If you have more than 30 seconds, like it or review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. Go check out our Facebook page that is getting a refresh, a revamp, we'll make sure that we're in there engaged and getting those questions answered. Mm-hmm. It's the Vacation Rental Revolution Facebook page. So go check that out as well. And then final, most important thing, I've said it a couple times at the end of this episode, just go pick that one thing you can do today. Start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, brother.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.